All right, Limits. I was not aware of this Penn State story. I mean, I was aware it was a story back in July, but I wasn't aware of the James Franklin news conference yesterday until you just pointed it out to me and what Ian Rappaport had to say about it. The original story I'm looking at is John Sauber, I think, from the Center Daily Times, where I'll just read from the beginning. James Franklin met with the media Wednesday evening but refused to answer questions related to the rape charges two of his former players are facing. And yes, those are now charges against Kavion Keys and Jameel Lyons. Very obviously serious. And if you look at the details here, pretty sickening stuff they are charged with. So then the question becomes how Penn State handled it at this news conference yesterday. Apparently the university put out a statement, what, a couple days ago? Is that right?
Yeah, when more information came out about the incident.
I mean, I'm dealing with this real time right now, and it's obviously very serious, so I want to really watch my words here. So they obviously want the statement from the university to stand. So when Franklin is asked about it, he appears to just step aside and let the PR guy come up and address the media and basically say, hey, we released a statement yesterday and we have no further comment. Correct?
Correct. So basically what happened is they read the statement. James Franklin walked to the podium, said, hey, guys, basically to get the press conference going. He was asked about the incident. A spokesperson came back to the podium and said that there will be no further comment, read the comment again. And then another reporter asked, you know, when
Aubrey Snyder followed up. Yes.
Correct. Audrey Snyder followed up and basically asked again, like, when were you made aware of this? Franklin again stepped off the podium. PR person came up. Franklin came back up to the podium and said, hey, guys, basically, like, nothing happened. And he did not say one word about the incident. He's getting a lot of flack for that.
Well, I'll say, just looking at the optics, listen, the university puts out a statement. It's an ongoing legal matter. I don't really expect him to go into details like, you know, we were made aware of this on this day and this day, and this is how we went. It's an open legal matter.
Right. There are some things that you can say and cannot say.
Mostly cannot say. Yeah, right now, especially if your bosses are telling you not to talk about it, correct?
Right.
Having said that, the optics just look terrible here.
Horrible.
Because he steps off the podium, goes and takes a drink of water. It just comes off as very nonchalant. The optics aren't good, and yet I understand what happened. I would think, though, it would have been better from a PR perspective to have the face of your football program say what needed to be said instead of him standing aside and letting somebody else come up there and say, we'll have no further comment, because the optics don't look good. And yet I understand completely why he wouldn't comment, because he's obviously under orders not to comment on an ongoing legal matter. I think both those things can be true. You?
I agree. I would have preferred James Franklin to say, just to him, read the statement or just reiterate it, not step off the podium and let somebody else speak for you. Like, if you're James Franklin, say, you know, we're standing by the statement. We have no other further comment at this time. I understand why that you have to ask.
Because he's the face of the program.
Exactly.
Because he is the face of the program and the head coach, to hear it from him. Of course, we're taking this as a university incredibly seriously. In fact, that's why I think, you know, that's why we got rid of these players before the charges even came down.
Right. And
we took it very seriously from the start. As you can see, I think that would have been better from Penn State's side to have him, James Franklin, say that, tell that to the world. Then the follow-up question, I just answered it. Clearly, we took it very seriously. I can't say right now the whens and wheres and all that, because I'm not allowed to, because it's an ongoing legal matter. But I can tell you, and it's coming from me, the guy here, the face of your program, that this was taken with the ultimate seriousness, basically from the time we heard about it, you know?
Yes.
That's why they're not here anymore. I think from Penn State's side, that would have been the best way to handle it. I do. And And I get why Franklin wouldn't obviously answer questions about things like, when did you first hear of it? You can't.
Right, but Franklin shouldn't just walk off the podium. I'm sure some people
are
looking
at it
as if he looks weak in this regard. A lot of people are going to make that argument. Why can't he just stand up there and basically reiterate what was already said? Like, why does he just deflect to somebody else? Like,
yeah, it doesn't. The optics are not great.
It's a PR nightmare.
But the bottom line is understandable. I think both of those things can be true. And people have a right to ask. You know, I look in the comments. I think Ian Rappaport put out a tweet, and then the comments underneath, you know, this is why people hate the media, blah, blah. Is that really the focus here? Go read the charges, you know? People have a right to ask questions, a duty, actually, to ask questions. And then the people, the parties being asked, then it's in their court, how they handle it. And ultimately, saying we've released a statement and saying perhaps it's an ongoing legal matter, that's true. It just needed, I think, to be heard from the face of your football program. That's it. That's what I have on that matter. And obviously that'll be a story moving forward. All right, a little trip around the NFL limits, and let's start in Baltimore. Where yet again, the Ravens are doing things that no offense has done before. This happened under Greg Roman. I think they were the most prolific rushing team in history, if I'm not mistaken. I could be mistaken about that. Maybe they were one of them, but I think they set the record. The last team that gained 150 rushing yards in each of its first eight games, like the Ravens have done, or are about to do if they do it again, was the 1960 Packers, coached by Vince Lombardi, Jim Taylor, Paul Hornung. What did they call their famous play? Wide right.
The seal here and the seal here, and they'll run it
yes.
in the alley.
Yes. I didn't think you had that in you, Limits, but you did. Them, those Packers. And now you have Lamar Jackson, and I'm sorry, but right now he's the MVP of the league. I'm not even seeing an argument for anybody else. It's almost like Ohtani, you know, when he was pitching. It's like, well, is it Ohtani or Aaron Judge 2 or 3 years ago, whenever that was? I mean, Judge is the better hitter so far, but how is Judge's year on the mound going? Lamar Jackson leads the NFL in passer rating. Needless to say, that's a quarterback stat. He's also on pace for 1,100 yards rushing. I mean, it's ridiculous. And then Derrick Henry has had a just total renaissance there. So the Ravens have an extremely high-powered offense. And that's why when I hear people on this station or people at large poo-pooing the Cooper Kupp idea, you know, thinking of every single problem that would keep you from pursuing Cooper Kupp aggressively. And the one that would keep me from doing it is if he's still hampered by this injury and it doesn't look like it's going to get better. We'll find out more tonight. But other than that, the money, he's guaranteed almost nothing after this year. I think $5 million for next year, nothing in 26. Slot receiver stuff, that's just been debunked by too many people, including you and I. If you just go look at the routes he ran against the Lions in the season opener, or if you watched his whole career, he runs routes from anywhere and he's always open against man or zone. His age, again, go back and look at the opener. He can still play, runs past people. He gets open on people. You know, you throw him little quick outs, wide receiver screens. He makes yards on those. He's still elusive and quick and really good. Overall point being, yeah, you can get by with the receiver group that you have, but the objective here is to win a championship, not a playoff game. I feel like somehow the goal has shifted to all in for winning one playoff game. What are we going to do? Celebrate with a ticker tape parade if they beat the Texans in a playoff game? What are we doing here?
We should hold a Browns 0-16 parade around the stadium. Remember when they did
that? Yeah, somebody going to jump into the Allegheny from the Steelers if they win a playoff game on a bet here? The goal, and it's in front of you. It's possible, if not, it's not probable, but possible, to make a run here. And the idea in the AFC arms race at the top is to be one of the players. And no matter how good Russell Wilson is, you're not going to have an advantage at quarterback against Lamar or Mahomes or Burrow if they get there, or Stroud or Josh Allen. So how do we, thinking from the Steelers' perspective, give ourselves more of a chance in this arms race? Well, a guy like Cooper Kupp would be a huge step in that direction. I just don't get the counter argument. I really don't. Yeah, second round pick is a steep price if it would come to that. I would think maybe a conditional third would get it done. But the franchise will survive. That's my prediction. And again, the fact that you have not only the urgency created by not having won a playoff game in 7 years, by having a 36-year-old quarterback, a 35-year-old franchise pillar on your defensive line who's only been involved in one playoff win, your best player overall just turned 30, he's been involved in none. That's the urgency side of it. And then the other side is that you can afford to give up a second-round pick because you have so many other picks that have panned out. You're not desperately relying on that pick. My God, we need an infusion of young talent. The last thing in the world we could do is give up a second round pick. No, you've put yourselves in position where you can lessen the impact of losing a second round pick because you have so many 25 and under players who look like they could be impactful themselves, who have outperformed their draft position. Zach Fraser might be a top five center in all of football already. Joey Porter looks like a star. Keanu Benton looks like a good player. Pickens is only 23. A number of other guys could be contributors, look like they will be, already have been. Mount Washington, Herbig, hopefully Fatanu by next year. Peyton Wilson is starting to come on in a big way. That puts you in position, hey, we're a team that has a core of young talent, therefore we could actually squander a pick here. Not squander, but utilize one to try to put us in better position in the arms race that is the penthouse of the AFC. You know, come on. What are we doing? When do we all become really cautious, fearful GMs? It reminds me of the Pirates when people talk about getting rid of prospects. Now, they're a little bit different because they've had so many not turn out. But when you have a number of young players in baseball, too, that puts you in position to then say, hey, now, you know, we see an opening to win. We've got a bunch of young guys. We can afford to part with some other ones still in the minors. I heard Donnie Football last night. I think he made sense. Like he said, the Steelers are a good football team. I don't know if there's argument about that right now. He didn't say great. He didn't say they're going to the Super Bowl. They're a good football team. That's going to be problematic for people when they get to the playoffs. And if they stay healthy, they will get to the playoffs. How can they enhance their position? This is the way, to me, limits. And I don't even remember where we started on that topic. But, competing with the Ravens offense. That's where.
And I think that Cooper Kupp does that to be able to add just an extra dynamic and extra element in the passing game, which can also help out your running game, which has been really good in front of a banged-up offensive line. I mean, you're talking about a Jets defense that, I mean, defensively, on their line, coming in was very, very good. And their defense was their strength with Aaron Rodgers on the offensive side of the ball. The defense was the strength, and they ran for over 100 yards and put up 400 yards of offense. So you add Cooper Kupp to that, and you play more difficult teams like Baltimore, and it kind of evens the playing field.
It sure does. You know why? Because he's open all the time. all the time. If we didn't have the Detroit tape from this year, I'd be more skeptical about this. Even though when Cup came back last year from an injury, he was really good. But I'd be a little bit more skeptical if we didn't have that tape against a pretty good defense, I might add. The tape don't lie, as they say. Elsewhere in the division, Jameis Winston says he's preparing to show he's a, quote, great NFL starter on Sunday. Limits, you think that's going to happen? You think Jameis, how old is he now? Is he pushing 30? He must be.
34, 35?
Yeah, I mean, no, he's only 30. He's not 34 or 35. Who are you and where did Limits go?
I'm Andy and Limits went to go get you food.
Oh, well somebody, oh my God, we have the Permane brothers. Is this the Russ?
What's the it called? The Dangerous Sandwich.
The Dangerous Sandwich. Andrew Lindberg, our internet man.
Gone.
Now here's Austin.
The pizza's gone.
The pizza's gone!
Oh, there was no email, anything. Everybody came and found the pizza, and it's gone.
Well, wait a second. Why do we need pizza if we have the Dangerous Sandwich?
I know. We
this is going to be gigantic. What's sandwich on this thing, Limits? And thank you to Permane's for delivering this. I'm excited.
Incredible.
Is this thing going to get intercepted on my way to eating it, Limits?
Well, you have a bread. Hope not.
You just said the pizza's gone, yet I look through the window, and you're eating a piece of pizza.
The cheese is gone.
What do you mean? It's just pizza with no cheese?
No, this is more like veggie pizza. There's one extra piece I got for you. I had one, and I got you one.
I have a stomach ache all of a sudden because of all the coffee I drank, so I desperately need food in my stomach, and I'm going to dig into this Dangerous Sandwich. This is unbelievable. He has a sandwich already named after him.
After one game. Let Russ cook.
I love this. All right. Coming up next, tell us about the 1 o'clock hour that you arranged, Wonder Twin.
We have some good things. We have a reporter from New York to give us a look at the Giants, and then we also have Jeff Hathorn at 1:30.
Man, are the Giants a sad franchise these days? They just cannot get it right. What has happened to them? They were a beacon. They were the Steelers of the NFC, it seemed, for all those years. Some of the great wins of the 21st century have come courtesy of the New York Giants. Not the least of which was beating the undefeated Patriots. But the last time they won a playoff game, when was the last time they won a playoff game, O Limitless Wonder?
The Giants?
Yeah.
They beat Minnesota, wasn't it, last year?
Yeah, they actually did. No, they beat Minnesota in 2022. I didn't realize they won a playoff game that recently.
Yeah, that was a game that they should not have
won. Where have I been?
But they dominated Minnesota.
Daniel Jones has won a playoff game? He threw for 301 yards that day and ran for 78? How did I miss that game? He was 24-35 for 301 and two touchdowns and no picks, and he added 78 yards on the ground.
Yep.
The dude had practically 400 yards of offense.
It was peak Daniel Jones performance. He played very, very well in that game.
Saquon Barkley scored twice. All right. So they have one playoff win since they beat the Patriots in 2011, the second time they beat them in a Super Bowl. And now they've really fallen on hard times. Before they won that playoff game, that was their only winning season since 16. They were 3-13, 5-11, 4-12, 6-10, 4-13, then they go 9-7-1 and win a playoff game, and now they're back to 8-16 over the past 2 years under the great Brian Daboll. He looked like he was going to be their savior, Wonder Twin. Clearly he's not.
Well, they should have never got rid of Barkley. They should have never let him walk.
And that was bigger problems than that.
They chose the wrong guy. They chose Daniel Jones over Saquon Barkley. I mean, come on now.
All right. Well, coming up next, would you dive into a mailbag with me?
I would love to. Intergalactically red. Easier for you to say than me.
I got some great questions, including about the Steelers drafting. Let's talk about that coming up. PetFest 24, presented by Subaru, is back.